Oh, bring back
just
the
Winfield. Just gotta throw the Jimmy Barnes Tina Turner version in there.
Bring back the Winfield Cup, I say. Oh my God. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. This is the NRL Grand Final. But it's not going to be our final NRL podcast this year. We'll probably have a couple more. You know, we'll talk about a couple other teams in reviews and all that. But this is all about the big game. The Melbourne Storm, my team, won the game 26-20 in front of 50% capacity of the crowd, which is good.
That
what
they
could have.
I thought they did really well to sort of make it look, I guess, sort of fuller than what it appeared to be in half capacity. Like it looked, I don't know, I reckon it looked like there might have been 50 or 55,000 there, I thought, but it just, I would have thought that they probably wouldn't have had a lot of the top tier of ANZ Stadium full. I sort of said to you last week there that, a couple of friends, we went to the 2008 grand final, Manly and the Melbourne Storm, and we were sitting right up the top of ANZ Stadium, and boy, it's a long way up there.
Yeah, and they had to stop that reconstruction as well. So, I mean, it looks spaced out pretty well to me.
It did look really well done. Just, I mean, like, you know, when you have 10 or 12 or 15,000, at ANZ Stadium, it looks disgraceful and empty and it looks horrible. But I thought they did a really good job. And it would have been camera angles as well if they didn't sort of fill up that a lot of that top tier. So they probably just wouldn't have shown a lot of that top tier to make it look like that bottom section was pretty full.
Yeah. And look, Melbourne got out to a goddamn hot start, a really, really hot start. Just dominated. I mean,
did they dominate? Ask Phil Gould. Did Melbourne dominate that first 20 minutes or so? Because if you ask Phil Gould, and just before we get started, can we just say one thing? Like, can Fox Sports please, 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 pretty please, sugar on top, to quote Stephen A. Smith, pretty please, sugar on top. Can they do a live grand final? Because that's the first time I've listened to Channel 9 this year, and I love Rabbits. I love Joey. Oh, my God. Gus Gould is pollution in my ears. He's pollution to my ears.
So that they've got that and the Origin locked up for the next 5 years. That was part of the new agreement. So it's completely exclusive to Channel 9.
Foxtel, they've got so much money. Just throw whatever they want at rugby league.
Well, they
throw whatever
they
want. My God, that was brutal to listen to.
It was, because apparently, you know, as good as the hot start that Melbourne had, and they really did look, and we'll talk about the refereeing and all that later, but as good as their hot start did, and they got out to that 16-0, apparently Phil Gould said, no, Penrith weren't not only in this game, they were on top of this game.
Oh, they were on top, yeah. After the Vunivalu intercept try, which Nathan Cleary just absolutely telegraphed that pass, a Sydney Harbour Bridge type pass that just landed pretty much right in Vunivalu's lap to run, 80, 85 odd meters.
Did it run? Did it land in his lap? Because I can't believe
he
jumped up. He fell on the ground. No one tackled him, and there's people still around. He was able to get up and still get to full speed and beat everybody that try line. I thought that was a remarkable try. There's no way, the catch alone, but just to sort of get up and then get the full speed. And he's talking now. I hope we don't lose him to Union. He's having second thoughts.
I bet he is now.
So because all that money's not guaranteed technically with the Queensland Reds. So why not? He was
one of Melbourne's best. And to say that for a winger to have, more than his regular influence on a game, let alone a grand final, I thought Vunivalu was really, really good in this game.
Yeah. He tends to be the kind of winger, and he still did it a little bit in this game, but he tends to be the kind of winger that pushes into the defense or runs up to sort of too quickly.
He likes to jam in.
And look, that doesn't work a lot of the time, but he did do it a couple of times, and they got a couple of tries out of it. But yeah, I thought it was a lot better than he has been. You know, he usually has butterfingers generally. I thought he was going to do that after that try. I thought he was just going to dive in the air and the ball was going to fall out. But
speaking of butterfingers, like, can Jerome Hughes catch a high ball?
No.
Like the opening kickoff, and he didn't want a bar of it.
No. Yeah.
That was unbelievable.
I said that opening kickoff, and he didn't want to touch it. And then that ball went out. I went, if this is what Melbourne's going to play, the way Melbourne's going to play, then we're going to be in massive trouble. Thankfully, they're
it was unbelievable. But to Melbourne's credit, like their scramble D defense in general, but more to their credit, their scramble defense when they were under pressure and under the pump was amazing.
Yeah.
In that first 25, 30 minutes, like they just kept repelling Penrith, and they're one of the top attacking teams that's going around.
Yeah.
You know, probably one of the two, but they've got arguably the best halfback in the competition. It was startling how Melbourne just kept repelling them away all the time. And you know, not so much to Gus's credit, but, you know, with an even share of possession that they had, especially throughout that first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, Melbourne did really well. There was a lot of shots that Penrith took inside that 20 meter zone of Melbourne, and that just demoralized them for until the 60th. Okay, until the 60th minute, we'll get into that. Oh no, sorry, 53rd minute. We'll get into that. You know, when we talk about the second half, but it just
I thought what they also did was they pulled Cleary out of the game. I thought their biggest danger, Abbey Coruscant. I thought he didn't have
his eyes
general game
did not go forward once.
No,
not to say once, but I don't know. He looked a little out of sorts.
Yeah.
He was looking sideways. It was all about just giving good service. He didn't want to engage the line. He didn't want to engage the markers. Whether or not the play, you know, it'd be good to sort of watch it again and see, you know, how the markers were. You know, were there no markers? Was there an opportunity for him to actually, you know, engage the line and try and take on the markers? Do you know what I mean? Like it was just totally nullified, and so was Jerome Luai.
Yeah.
For all the talk and all the niggle that he loves to get, oh boy, for that first 60 minutes, he was as quiet as a mouse.
He was quiet. I keep forgetting that firstly the guy is a New South Welshman, born and bred, and secondly he's only 23 years old. I didn't realize that until I started watching and they were sort of talking about it. I know. We'll talk about New South Wales squads later, but he effectively got shut out. It was probably as good as the Melbourne's offensive was in that first half. It was their defense, their scramble defense. You're exactly right. They were
unreal.
They were unreal. They were literally unreal. They, you know, to repel that side, who have weapons everywhere, have absolute weapons everywhere. That young Stephen Crichton, who's, you know, he got a try, but, you know, he's a weapon. Kickout got nullified big time.
Totally out of the game. He tried.
I
think the suspension had something to do with it because he was out for that preliminary final. I think that absolutely had something to do with it. Whether or not it's the coaching staff or whether or not it was somebody in the team is going to come and say, man, you're going to have such a big game tonight. You know, you missed out on their last game. And I think it got to him.
He tried to do
way too much, and that's just
he just has
to let the game come to him and just play, you know, sort of not so much off the cuff, but he's just got to play to his strengths. And some of the things he was doing, you know, poor offloads and you know, trying to play the ball too fast when he's on his back, you know, when he's being turtled a little bit, and he's just struggling around and dropping the ball. You're just like, oh my god.
Yeah,
like worst performance for the grand final can't happen.
It was kind of across the board. I mean, James Fisher-Harris didn't have that kind of, you know, game that he usually had. I thought Isaiah Yao was pretty good. You know, he did what he effectively has been doing all year. You know, getting the effective meters, the effective runs, offloads, and things like that. But other than that, they were nullified. They really were nullified.
They were totally nullified. Until we get to the second half.
Until the ref let him in the game.
Straight up. Well, and that was the thing. Like, as soon as the second half started, like, Penrith absolutely wasted their challenge, like their coach's challenge, with, I think it might have been James Fisher-Harris.
It was Fisher-Harris.
He thinks he dropped the ball, and he absolutely dropped the ball. It's rung true all year. Do not believe a prop on a challenge.
That's exactly what the words they said. They'd love to see how many challenges a prop actually got right. It was. He knew he dropped it, which is the weirdest thing.
I can count them on one hand.
But up until really that 50th minute when Brian Toto got that try, simply because Vunivalu did what Vunivalu generally does and sort of, you know, effectively run in and I guess try to nullify that outside
it
pass.
It doesn't matter. It shouldn't have been allowed to stand.
Well, yeah. So was it Yao that kicked the ball? Was it someone else?
It was Yao.
He ran about a meter.
He ran about a meter and a half behind one of his own players and kicked it straight away. So there's just no chance that anybody can come up and try and, you know, put any it just you could hear Joey Johns on the commentary. Yeah. You simply cannot do that.
No, it's called an obstruction rule for a reason. It is an obstruction for that reason.
You just simply can't do it. He had to drop to the ground, surrender in the tackle. You can't take an advantage from that and kick to the side. It just cannot happen in the biggest game of the year.
Well, you can't say
everybody is watching.
There was a thousand calls, like even the one I think. It was a Melbourne try. It was Olam's first try. Like, you know, that was a bit sort of... Well, it's the rule.
The kick out. That's right. He lunged out at the ball. So they had no choice but to give a penalty try.
Yeah, no. But even just before that, I think they let it go because of the... I think it was the outside sort of shoulder thing. I think it was that one. Or it might have been another try where... You know, all I'm getting at is that obstruction is that if they're clearly obstructed to try to get the tackle to the player.
Penrith had, what, three tries disallowed in that first half?
And they were all justified.
So the one you're talking about, I think it might have been Mansour that went in.
It was Mansour, that's right. They've hit.
And it was absolutely... Two defenders had come in and converged on Stephen Crichton, and he blasted right through them. And it's like, well, you can't hit the line of defense. It doesn't matter if he's caught the ball on the outside shoulder. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The Melbourne defense, whether or not they knew it or not, both of them come in and hit Crichton, and that basically constitutes an obstruction because they've hit the line of defense, and you can't do it. You have to hit the gap.
They've hit the outside shoulder, and the outside shoulder
He caught it on the outside shoulder. He absolutely caught it on the outside shoulder, but because Crichton went through and hit the defenders in the line, you can't do that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then we move on to the second half. Yeah, Brian Toto. Disallowed try. Well, it should have been a disallowed try, but it sort of went through. And then it can't happen.
And the whole game changed.
Yeah.
You could see the frustration on Bellamy's face. You could see Melbourne. getting the O's around the 61st minute. Oh. They're trying to flick the ball out the back and chuck it over the top of their head and everything. And Bellamy, holy, how he not had a coronary throughout that second half. I have no idea how those blood vessels on the side of his head did not burst. I'll have no idea. You could see what he was mouthing.
I don't know who's microphone he grabbed. I think it was Ryan Hoffman or another. It was Jason Roll.
He was screaming into Jason Roll's headset.
I've never seen someone scream into a microphone like that. You also see as well.
I think it might have been just before a scrum. I think Penrith had been knocked out of bounds. You know, knocked over touch, and just before they were packing the scrum, before all that, you know, when they were trying to get a little, Melbourne were just trying to get too cute and too flashy, and even Cameron Smith on the field wasn't as animated as what Craig Bellamy was, but you could see him laying down the law. Don't get too cocky and try and be too flashy. Let's just win this game.
Yeah. Let's actually just complete a set of six, because that's what it looked like they were.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Stop trying to play hero ball and trying to get yourself a moment in the grand final. Just do your job.
Yeah.
Do it well. Win the game.
Yeah. And they did, literally just. Oh, man. But, I mean, even right at the end there, I think Bellamy, there was a plastic chair that had no, that was never going to live when Bellamy. That
chair up in the coach's box after the Jerome Hughes. Was it the Jerome Hughes sin binning or was it the Brandon Smith sin binning?
It was a Brandon Smith sin binning, because then Cleary sort of Cleary scored from that anyway, so it was that, and he lost his that. Yeah, that chair had no chance of living.
It's dead. It's dead. I'd like to see if somebody got a picture of it.
I'll talk about the sin bins in a second,
Bellamy couldn't even enjoy the game half an hour afterwards.
He went straight to Cameron Smith, and he was pissed straight after the game. You just won a grand final, and he still wanted to talk about it. Yeah,
I've never seen that after a grand final win. Like, you know, granted, okay, Penrith almost come back and stole and did the impossible, you know, obvious, which, you know, I tend to believe what Cameron Smith was sort of spruiking at the end. I did agree with the Jerome Hughes sin binning. Jerome Hughes absolutely stopped, looked, and changed his line.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that one.
He deserved the 10 in the bin. But, you know, Cameron Smith, you could hear him on the ref's microphone is sort of coming, I know you want to make it, you know, an exciting finish, but he's being very nitpicky. Very nitpicky, and I think he was absolutely right.
Brandon Smith was just, that wasn't a sin binnable offence, I didn't think.
It was pretty obvious.
Well, no, yeah, I don't know. Right, I don't, light, yeah.
To that point, he didn't give the referee any other choice.
He didn't, okay, that's fair. That's, he probably didn't give the referee any other choice, but, God, it was... I'm stepping on little things later, but God, it was one of the worst referee games I've seen in a long time. It really was. He overused the bumper
as well. And towards the end of it, there was this BS penalty on Cameron Smith where he's being held down and his arm was being held in by Stephen Crichton. Yeah. Cameron Smith is just standing there. You could see his arm trapped in between Crichton and between the ball carrying arm and Crichton's body. Yeah. If Smith had have ripped that out, it would have been a penalty. You could see him looking at the referee saying, he's holding me in, and he calls a penalty. Okay, so a bit of BS there. But the phrase that you can use in a lot of ball sports is the ball don't lie. Because when they tried to kick the penalty out, Pappenhausen did a Superman-type dive to knock the ball back in. And that's exactly what I said during the game. Don't lie, because that was absolutely not a penalty on Cameron Smith.
No, that Pappenhausen keeping that ball in, that was amazing.
That was unbelievable. He
literally had to jump 2 metres out. Yeah.
Towards the end of the game, got him the Clive Churchill.
Yeah, well, funny you mentioned that. I was just going to mention that if you had Cameron Smith as your Clive Churchill medalist, Sportsbet decided to pay you out at half time. Which was a nice sort of hefty fee for certain people like myself that put it on Cameron Smith, even though Pappenhausen got the Clive Churchill. So that was, I looked it up, that was a $5 million blunder. So they basically said, you could have waited till the end of the game.
If you're a bettor and you put a bet on the Clive Churchill medalist, all you have to do is wait 80 freaking minutes. If you can't hold your wad for 80 minutes, and just wait until they decide who the Clive Churchill medalist, and Sportsbet want to come in and say, oh, yeah, we're for the punters, blah, blah, blah. Just wait the 40 minutes until they give out the award.
Like, I'm glad they didn't wait.
Sportsbet must be hard up for any cash. Do you know what I mean? They must be doing pretty goddamn well if they can take that chance. And like you said, a $5 million blunder. $5 million, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they sort of did. They went whatever, and they had a $1 million blunder in a they paid something out, and they said, well, the Trump election. They paid out
They've done it before. Years ago, Sportsbet was one of the ones that paid out on the Ashes. That Australia was supposed to be in this country. They were up 2-0 and they blasted the absolute piss out of the Poms in Perth, and they were up 2-0. And Sportsbet went, yeah, we've got this. We're going to pay out everybody, you know, that Australia won the Ashes. It ended up being a draw at 2-2. Do you know what I mean? Like you know you're in for the long haul if you're putting your bet on somebody winning the Ashes. Do you know what I mean? Until it's 3-0 or until, you know, it's a given, because there were still three tests to go. So until it's a given, just wait. Like, honestly, just wait.
Hey, well, if they got the money, too bad for them. That's their own fault.
Oh, that's what I mean. They can't be hard up for any cash. You know, they must be doing pretty damn well if they can go, screw it. If we screw up, we screw up.
What'd you think of – so Pat Verhuizen, you think, deserved – Clive Churchill, because we both sort of said that. I thought so.
Absolutely. Yeah. We said that on the chat, you know, on a group chat during the night. That play, you know, the 75th minute or whatever it was, solidified it.
Even his 45th minute try, he just it's pure speed, don't get me wrong, but, you know, just to get between the two defenders. And
the thing was about that, you're right, go.
I was going to say, it's rare seeing a player put their head down to get more speed. I was trying to rack my head of who's done that, because it's not the greatest thing to do, especially, I mean, he obviously believes in his own speed, but to have your head down running while this player possibly could smash you.
Like a rhino. Yeah.
It was literally like a rhino. It was. That's actually a perfect analogy. It was like a rhino. But,
The funny thing about that was he just got totally, you know, Penrith got totally burnt off the centre scrum. The reason they brought in Tyrone May to the starting side again, even with 14 on his back, was for defensive purposes, right? Mm. Who did he get past?
Tyrone May. Yeah.
On the inside.
Yeah.
So, to dump Brendan Nathan on the bench... Yeah, even though you're going to say, yep, we're going to start you, you know, at the center, and then do the same thing what they did last week, in the preliminary final.
Yeah.
And then for him to that's the reason they put him in for defensive purposes, and he got scorched right after halftime.
Oh, he got scorched big time. And Nathan wasn't he wasn't too impressed with that. He was a bit.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, obviously, I mean, you know, he was named number three and then he had to start on the bench. I don't think he played many minutes at all.
Two weeks in a row now that's happened.
I don't think he played. How many minutes did he play? It wouldn't have been much. 32 minutes. So,
you know when he got brought on?
Right after that. That works out. Okay.
Yep, absolutely right after that.
Overall, but did you think it was a good game? It wasn't a grand final.
I still enjoyed the game. I generally don't enjoy a grand final except for 2016 and 2005. But both for different reasons. But
both for the same reason, technically. But anyway,
totally different reasons. Like 2005, that's pretty obvious. The Cowboys lost, but 2016, don't get me started on my disdain for the Cronulla Sharks. Yeah. I wanted to see them go another 50 years without winning a premiership. Anyway. I generally do enjoy a grand final. If it's gonna be an ass beating, just let it be an ass beating. Don't, as referees, you know, don't try and, you know, square things up or just let it happen. Don't invite the criticism in, and that's what the not so much the referee did his job in doing that. But the bunker absolutely invited an absolute bleep ton of criticism to come into this game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that probably segues perfectly. I think, well, we might as well start with our dud of the week. I think you had them as your dud of the week.
Absolutely.
The bunker?
The bunker.
Yeah.
The more that I think about it, the more I keep saying it. How do they keep getting these things wrong? How?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't understand.
I don't know.
Like, that's a big investment by the NRL to have this and to have the technology and things like that. How do they keep getting things that are so obvious wrong?
I don't know. I mean, that's the whole point. You have this. This is the whole point. You had it. I don't.
Exactly. Just get the right call. That's the problem. I don't give a you know what how long it takes, unless it takes 3 or 4 minutes. Just get the right call.
Yeah.
That's what it's there for. It's the same thing as DRS in the cricket. Just get the right call. Yeah, you know, it's there to take out the DRS is there to take out the howler. This is sort of the same, but just get the right call. That's all I want.
And it wasn't. There was a lot of missed calls because my dad's the referee. I thought that was the worst referee game I've seen in ages, and I'm not just talking a grand final, just in general. I think
it was
he overused the bunker, and.
He overused the bunker because KFC would have been like, hey, this is going to have the most eyeballs on it for the year. You better go to the bunker every opportunity that you can.
Every time I've seen that popcorn chicken slab, I swear to God, I said, I just was going off every time I've seen that I wanted that popcorn chicken slab. No, I'm not going to lie. Seeing that was amazing. But
you should have got on a bit of menu log action and just said, I just want a popcorn chicken slab.
I would have taken three popcorn chicken slabs. That's how much I wanted it. They look so good. I haven't had one yet. But, overused it, but like Cameron Smith said, I don't think we've touched on it yet, but he tried to make an exciting finish.
He did.
He was nitpicking. You know, Cameron Smith escaped a 20 grand fine by the looks of that. It was $20,000.
He should have been fined 20 grand, but he's telling the truth.
To basically say to the referee, stop trying to make an exciting finish, which is clearly picked up on the microphone.
That's exactly.
And even I just read the Storm CEO, Dave Donnelly, joked the referee, Jared Sutton, would have sent more Storm players off if he had time on the clock. So... Oh my god. It was poorly bunker, poor referee. They missed sort of clear little things. Clear little things. It wasn't technically a great game. I mean, it ended up being a better game. I mean, the start was it was dewy, it was wet, there was showers. It technically got better, but at the start it was kind of hogwash, especially obviously that first kick when Jerome Hughes left the ball.
Oh, he didn't want to bar it. That was unbelievable.
In the first touch, I know.
Kick off in a grand final, he didn't want to bar it.
I'm surprised the camera didn't went up to Bellamy. So surely went off in that one as well.
Could you imagine? Yeah, right there and then. That's where the veins in the side of his head would have started to pulse a little bit harder right there. And by the time we got to the 60th minute, they would have been in full effect. I think he started to calm down a little bit when he was handing out the premiership rings. And there's another thing. Why in the blue hell is Craig Bellamy handing out the premiership rings? It took him forever.
Yeah.
Why is he handing out the rings?
I mean, I thought I kind of put it down to COVID, like the whole, they couldn't have certain people. That's all I could put it down to. But the thing with the rings is, I'm sure it happens in NFL and all that. How the hell did only most of them, if not all of them, fit on their pinky finger? I mean, who the hell wears a ring on their pinky finger?
I'd say before grand final week, they would get sized up.
I don't believe they all wanted a pinky.
Have you seen what the ring looks like? Has it got Melbourne Storm on it? Has it got Storm on it? Do you know what I mean?
I was trying to look at when, Brandon Smith's post-match interview awesomeness. That was like so close to my...
All he wanted to do was get on the pitch.
That was like close to my start of the week. That's... his whole post-interview, but he had this sort of ring there. Most of them had on their pinky. So I don't believe that they all got it sized up. Everybody cost-cutting measures and went for the smallest finger.
Well, and the other thing, too, I suppose you can always go and get it resized if it's wrong. But is it just a normal, boring, generic, hey, NRL premiership winner? Do you know what I mean? Like,
it didn't look very inviting. You can't have a brief look at it. I don't know if I'm just trying to Google it now.
Super Bowl rings aren't handed out the night of the Super Bowl.
No, well, that's right.
Like, they're specially designed by ownership group and they're done afterwards. Yeah, you know, NBA championship rings aren't handed out the night of the NBA championship. So why the hell are we doing it in Australia?
I don't know. But yeah, I was about to say my start of the week nearly went to Brandon Smith. So not only he said that, he goes, his first words were, "Yeah, I had a pretty shit game." But I'll take the ring anyway, and I might have to sell it just to drink a bit. I might have to sell it to pay for all the piss I'm about to drink.
Pay for all the beers I'm about to drink tonight.
No, he said piss. I mean,
what a star.
I couldn't. I mean, it was clearly I couldn't look past Pappenhausen. That was pretty evident.
Absolutely, I mean, not.
That was very evident.
Yeah,
so, we didn't have to really go on to that with that much. So that's sort of, I guess,
a very, very close second was Brandon Smith's post game interview.
Oh, it was amazing.
I still haven't had a chance to look at the post game press conference with Craig Bellamy, because I don't know if he still would have been fuming.
He wasn't after that. He wasn't happy. He sort of calmed down a little bit, but he didn't smile that much.
No, once he was sort of shaking everybody's hand. After handing out all the premiership rings and everything like that, you know, shaking everyone's hand and doing all the pleasantries of, I think he started to sort of wind down a little bit after that, but you could see that he was just in full enragement for I don't know how long. Like, he's gonna have to, man, I hope they, I don't know, took him to a strip club or something just to sort of calm him down. Like, you know, on Sunday night down there, just something, man, because he needed something.
Well, apparently they all text Hoops Jake from yeah. So you can't take this one off your office.
Well, who's to say down the road they can't? But anyway.
Oh, bullshit! look at the amount of players. See, that's Bellamy. The players that they had, that you know, surely that's well under the cap of the players they had. But anyway. Digressing away, it was a great grand final. They're clearly the top two teams. I mean, that was the thing I, you know, took out of it. That it was is very, even though they came back, it was very evident that they were the two teams that deserved to be there. Extremely evident.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We'll move on to a couple of weeks ago we reviewed the bottom four. Teams, I guess more of a season in review, the bottom four teams of the ladder. I think it was like, I think we went 16th, 15th, 14th, 13th. We'll look at the, that'll be then 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. Oh my God, I'm just working out that I can correct. Actually count. Yeah,
so that'll be St. George, the West Tigers, the New Zealand Warriors, and the Gold Coast Titans.
Who do you want to start with?
Well, I guess we'll start who finished. Who ended up finishing 12th? The St. George Dragons. Oh, sorry, St. George Illawarra Dragons. Don't leave the Illawarra out of there. The Illawarra region will probably get a little bit upset with us if we leave them out. But look, they lost they lost a couple of key players this year to opposition teams. You know, Tyson Frizzell going to Newcastle and Aiken going to the Warriors. So I think they're two. Pretty big losses.
Plus James Graham's gone home, if you want to throw him in.
No, that's right. Yeah, Jimmy Graham's gone home, which is a massive loss, man. I love James Graham so much.
And possibly
to see him, you know, walk away, not so much walk away, but to leave, you know, I guess with his, you don't want to say it, but with his tail between his legs, because he doesn't deserve that. Like, no. He is such a great player, and for St. George to just beat him so badly in the head with a stick for the last couple of years that they've been so poor, for him to go back home to England, I think is a real a real testament to how poorly St. George Illawarra have been over the last couple of years.
Well, they still got a question mark on another forward, Jack DeBellin. You know, there's still no word if he's going to be available next year. So, I mean, they have made an astute appointment in Anthony Griffin as a coach. I think that is
a really good, really good appointment.
Much needed steal that they needed, that they lacked, unfortunately. They really...
McGregor was bad, but hopefully he can sort of, you know, instill a little bit of defensive toughness, and you know, not so much, you know, sort of you don't want a coach that's sort of going to mollycoddle you through the season. Do you know what I mean? You want to give your team a little bit of toughness and a little bit of edge. So well, I think it's going to be a super hard preseason for. For St. George Illawarra.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's, you know, they got a couple of the key forwards that were New South Wales reps last year and played phenomenal last year in Paul Vaughan and Tarek Sims, who needs to be just better consistent performances. They're the two.
Sims was in and out being hurt. Corbin Sims was in and out being hurt.
Yeah, but, Paul, you know, Vaughan, but they weren't consistent enough.
Paul Vaughan decides to sign himself into a cafe under Vaughan Paul.
That's when you know you're a footy player. You can't think of anything else but your name backwards. Like that's
was that actually what he did? I mean, he signed in.
Oh, that's what we heard.
That he would sign in as Vaughan Paul. I think that'd be funny as. Look, the big thing for me, I think last year too, was the major inconsistency of Corey Norman, like. What do they do with him? He's on an $850,000 contract. I thought Adam Clune did pretty well when he was called up and brought in to the side. What's the future hold? Do they look at leaving Ben Hunt at 9, Cameron McGuinness at 13? Do you know what I mean? Like, where to me, there's so many decisions to be made. That's a big one for me. Is McGuinness was sort of chopped and changed a little bit throughout the year. Performed well along with Matt Duffy, Zach Lomax. Were all very, very much bright spots.
I think McGuinness was their player of the year. I mean, he so much so. Obviously, he deserved to get his NRL spot. New South Wales spot. I think he looked better. That's the problem. I think he looked better at number 9, but then the problem is where do you put Ben Hunt if he can't play at halfback?
Big decisions to be made. Yeah, well, Cameron McGuinness finished second this year in tackles made.
Yeah. 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 I think he I think he's better at 9. I mean, Ben Hunt was bought there to be playing 7. He can play 9 very well.
He did play better at 9 this year.
He did play better at 9.
That's the problem. If he wasn't playing as well at number 9, then you go, okay, we'll just leave him in halfback. But I think he sort of flourished a little bit in that number when he moved to that number 9 role. So it's, you know, and at the start, you know, at the start when they first did it, I thought Cameron McGuinness looked a little lost because he's played. You know, he's played a lot of number 9 in his career, and for him to sort of move to the middle of a bit more closer to the middle of the field at 13, and I just thought he looked a little lost, but he got better as the season goes on, you know, positionally, offensively and defensively. There's a few big calls for St. George to make over this offseason for Anthony Griffin.
Yeah. The next team was the West Tigers, who finished 11th. I think the way that for every good performance they put in, they put two bad ones in. So there was like one step forward, two steps back kind of team. For me, I think we've talked about this during the year, but Michael Maguire, I didn't like the way he chopped and changed his squad so much.
It was crazy. People being playing out of position. You want consistency if you're a first grade player. Like You just can't chop it and especially the halves. You know, sometimes Luke Brooks will be on the bench, Josh Reynolds will come in, or Benji will be on the bench, and you want a little bit of continuity, and you want to build combinations, and that's not the way to do it.
That's their, out of all their positions, that is their biggest glaring hole, is what to do in the halves. We, you know, we've talked about Benji before, so he's shown the door, regardless of where he's going. Luke Brooks has gone backwards, and Josh Reynolds.
Luke Brooks has regressed probably two of the last three seasons.
And Josh Reynolds is barely sort of played. So I don't know what they do in the halves. I mean, they have picked up a forward. I'm just trying to think. James Tarman.
They picked up Jimmy Tarman.
This is a great pickup. Really good pickup. So I think their forwards aren't, you know, they got Josh Alawai, you know, Luciano's in there, Alex Twile. So they, you know, their forwards aren't sort of
bad. It's not a bad forward pack, but it's just. You got a decent strike weapon in Norfoluma out on the wing. Adam Dewey will be better for the run this year, playing at fullback. I hope they sort of stick with him. What do they do with Moses Embiid?
Well, see, my thought is, and I know he's played the position, I don't know if he likes it, but they're not going to have Harry Grant next year. I mean, Melbourne aren't going to give that up. That's not going to happen.
I've seen an interview with him on NRL 360. He's absolutely going back to the Storm.
Yeah. Does Moses Emboy, he's played number nine before, you know, he's and played every... to fix a position. is that his position? Because
he's jack of all trades. He's good at a lot of positions, not great at one.
There. I think he can
They're
play
gonna
there.
Have to put him there.
I just don't know what they do with their halves. I really have no idea what they do with their halves. That is their biggest. I don't know if they can get anybody. They can't. I think their salary cap's a huge mess. They're a weird team because obviously the last couple of years before that, they keep finishing ninth. So they've regressed. I honestly don't know where they go.
They had a pretty good start to the year. Like the first, it sort of broke it up into two halves a little bit. Like, so after the first 10 rounds, they were 5-5. So, you know, I think they were just, you know, on the cusp of the eight. I think they were seventh position. After round 10, they won two games. They beat Canterbury by one and Manly by two.
And
that was it. So inconsistent. They just let themselves down time and time again. They've lost so many players this year as well. You know, Elijah Taylor, Eisenhuth, Robert Jennings is gone. Ben Madalino retired sort of early. Chris McQueen. Benji Marshall, Chris Lawrence.
Lawrence.
All gone.
Yeah.
So Maguire and their front office brass, they have got a lot of work to do.
The next team is the Warriors, who end up finishing 10th. I mean, what can you say about the Warriors? But as phenomenal as that's phenomenal. They had to essentially relocate to Central Coast due to COVID-19. So. It was a huge roller coaster for them, but and no one expected them to get where they were. They were only a couple of games, a couple of weeks out of possibly making the top eight.
Well, that's it. It ended up being two wins out of the eight. But look, let's not forget the Melbourne Storm as well. They had to uproot out of Victoria and leave their families for 5 months.
No, that's true.
So,
but this is, you know, to me, I don't know, this feels
this
a lot.
Is moving countries, but they still would have had zero contact with their families.
Possibly.
So, small amount of contact with their family. So, look, you know, they had Ken Mamalo and David Fusatua leave to go home early. They had Leeson Armau and Bundy Afoa, you know, two big props that gone most of the year with injuries. For them to be competitive as they were, you know, well-deserved of the Ken Stevens medal, like the entire club got it on Dally M night. So, they've made a few good signings. I think, you know, they've got Aiden Fanua-Blake.
That's going to be
Manly, which is a massive signing. You know, Ewan Aitken, and they've signed Kane Evans as well from Parramatta. So they're getting some big
Ben
boppers.
Ben Murdoch-Masalia as well.
Ben Murdoch-Masalia as well.
And Ewan Aitken's not too bad.
Ewan Aitken is, I guess, he was the second best centre at the Dragons. I thought Zach Lomax had an unbelievable season. But for them to lose Ewan Aitken is a big loss for St. George as well, but that's a super pickup for the Warriors.
I think we've mentioned this as well during the year, or I think we possibly talked about it. I mean, their coach, before we move on that bit, their coach that's taking over from Todd Payton is Nathan Brown. What do you think of that signing?
I don't think that Nathan Brown absolutely deserves another shot. He got a-holed out of Newcastle, which never should have happened.
Yeah.
They should have at least stuck with him a little bit longer, Nathan Brown. He was the one that pulled that club out of the sewer.
Yeah.
You know, to construct the roster that they did there at Newcastle. And for them to dump him, I thought was really rough. But for him to get a shot at the Warriors, it's essentially the same job, you know, that he's gonna have to go out there and it's hopefully they give him the chance to go out there and recruit and build a team. Just go out there and go, we need to make, you know, 5, 6, 7 big signings right now and make a huge splash right now. He needs to develop players and he needs to make the right signings.
I think they have I think they have a great side that can make the top 8 right now. The one glaring weakness that they have is the number 9. They do not have an established hooker. And yep. I think the only way they're going to be contender is getting an elite 9. And it doesn't have to be an elite 9. I mean, I think they use Carl Lawton. He's a sort of good sort of sign.
Carl Lawton and Wade Egan were their main dummy halves. And to say they're serviceable, but you want somebody who's a little bit more than just serviceable, especially if you want that really good go forward. You know, your number 9 a lot of the times is going to be a guy who fuels the fire in, you know, sort of catching markers offside, you know, getting your team to roll forward quickly. Also, you know, obviously quick play the balls help that as well. But, you know, if you've got an eyes front dummy half and not an eyes sideways dummy half, then I think they'll do really well. And one that's on the scrap heap at the moment is Jake Granville. He could go over there and fit the mold. I think he's a lot more serviceable than what Carl Lawton and Wade Egan are.
I think so. The only one that pops to my mind, depending on what happens with Melbourne and Cameron Smith, I mean, clearly, if they could get a New Zealander like Brandon Smith into that 9.
Oh, my God.
Well, he loves New Zealand.
Get him to come home, that would be huge.
He's got his girlfriend still in New Zealand. I remember seeing he's the funniest guy I've ever listened to on Fox Sports. But,
the block of cheese.
Well, they did an interview with him, and he just showed this beautiful property. He goes, yeah, I'm just at my missus's house with their parents. That's where I'm staying. So he's hilarious. But, I don't think, again, Melbourne will let him go. But it all depends what happens to Cameron Smith.
Well, he said in that interview, like you said, even if as much as it's not going to be great, you know, for him, then he's more than happy for Cameron Smith to stick around and carry him to another couple of premiership rings.
He did say that. So they're probably not going to get him. Jake Granville's not a bad one. There's not a lot of 9s coming out at me, but I think they've still got Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, who is always the Cowboys contender.
The Cowboys are invested in Reece Robson, and they've signed Reuben Cotter to an extension. So, yeah. You know, unfortunately, Jake Granville's the third wheel, and whether or not they're going to grant him a release like they've done with Isan Masters, and get him to, you know, you can look for another club or not.
I think that'd be
well to try and pursue that. I just don't think that there's going to be that many, you know, super dummy halves out there that are going to be willing to cross the ditch.
I think Nathan Peets is another one that comes to mind. I think he's on the scrap heap as well.
Peets has been essentially let go from the Gold Coast as well. So that could be – actually, he's probably a little bit better than Jake Granville. So
that's probably not a bad one, I think he's possibly on that scrap heap too. What you said there before we move
– he absolutely is on the Gold Coast. He's been – yeah, him and Tyrone Roberts have been let go.
Well, before we move on to Gold Coast, what you just said there, they have employed Phil Gould, you know, as a development consultancy, but for that sheer fact of what you just said then, they've employed him to get players to go there and want to live and stay in New Zealand. Maybe not, you know, for the whole time, but enjoy coming to New Zealand, get it across the ditch. That is their biggest problem. And then, you know, they have a great New Zealand players there now, phenomenal New Zealand players, but that's their biggest problem, really. I mean, it's attracting people. I mean,
yeah, it's right.
It's funny.
Right. Yeah, people, it's, right. it's like recruiting. Not so much recruiting for Melbourne because they're going to go down there for the prestige and Craig Bellamy, but that's like recruit. It's, you know, I hate to bring it back up. It's like recruiting for the North Queensland Cowboys. You got to try and you know, coerce them and woo them to try and get them to come up to North Queensland to play football. It's not, you know, a crazy free agent, you know, destination that people are sort of clamoring to come up here. And New Zealand, you know, the Warriors, unfortunately, is the same.
I mean, I tell you what, if I was getting half decent money, I'd love to go to New Zealand for a year or a couple of years.
I mean, that would be an attractant, but you know, it's a hard cap. So
I don't get these players like, you know, maybe it's a whole family thing. I don't know, but I think it's not a bad, it's not the worst place to go to, you know, to play football. That's for sure.
No, that's right. There's worse places to be.
So the last team was the team we just sort of mentioned that finished ninth, phenomenally finished ninth for the Gold Coast Titans. You know, they started quite poor before COVID sort of hit. They were destined to be Wooden Spooners.
Quite poor is very flattering to the way that they played at the start of the year. They were just straight up garbage, disgraceful, horrid, to any other adjective you could describe for poo. Like they were unbelievably bad.
They
won six. But the thing, 1-6 of their last eight games.
Yeah.
Five on the trot to finish the season.
And I know I and I'm not saying it's just him, because I know you will say AJ Brimson, you know, at the back as
Oh no, you can say it all you want. Oh, I'm going out there and saying it. It was absolutely AJ Brimson. He come back in round 12. And they just got pipped by the Roosters.
Yeah.
Showed really, really well. I think he was brought in as a late replacement at fullback. And after that, that's what I mean. They won six of the last eight games with AJ Brimson there.
Him and also, and he clearly, yeah, I think he was their spark, their linchpin. I think, you know, astutely getting Jamal Fogarty and moving Ash Taylor to six. Not Ash Taylor, but Jamal Fogarty was a revelation for that side. An absolute revelation.
Yeah. Yeah, he was terrific. Now, if they can catch, like I said before, if they can catch lightning in a bottle again, and Jamal Fogarty has the same sort of season again, then that'd be terrific, and that would be really good for their development. You know, also, they lost a few good players, and ones that sort of really didn't, I don't think, lived up to their full potential. You know, obviously, Cartwright. Was a bit of a bust for the Gold Coast in his time up there. They lost Ryan James. He just the last 2 years, he's been hurt. And they've lost Jai Arrow. Like, they knew they were losing him from pretty much the start of the season. So, you know, he can take him and his stupid haircut down to South.
They
made some signings.
So they've obviously picked up David Fifita, which, I think he's going to be brilliant. It's hard to pay a player $1.2 million for so many little games. That's all I'm going to say about him. I'm not saying he's terrible. I'm just saying it's hard to pay.
You can see the potentials there. They had not so much. They didn't have no choice, but they're going to have to pay overs for a few of these players. And look, and if he was willing to take the money and go there, then the Gold Coast have just sort of got to hope that, that they've extended Kevin Proctor, so he wants to stick around. You know, obviously they signed SASA as well. Fasua Mala'ali from Melbourne is going there as well. So, boy, they're going to have a real handful
That's an astute signing, that one. That's Tino. I mean, David Fifita signed. Getting Tino at such a young age, that's, you know, pushing those, you know, he's not only pushing to sort of get into that starting 13, but he's pushing for for representative honours.
That's right.
So, you know, you're right. They've also kept Proctor. They still got Petey there. They got Moriaki.
It took a little while, and I don't think that, Garth Brennan had sort of worked out, you know, early on in the piece when he did bring Peachy up there where to sort of play him. But, Justin Holbrook stuck. He did the same. So he sort of made the same mistake at the start of the season where he was sort of umming and ahhing where to play Tyrone Peachy. But once he put him in that 13 jersey, he looked happy and set.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was playing good football towards the end of the season. I think that was another big another big reason why they were starting to play a bit better, was at least Tyrone Peachy could go out there and go, not have to, think to himself, well, where am I going to be playing this week? Am I going to be on the bench? Am I going to be in the centers? Am I going to be in the second row? Like he's given him the 13 jersey and he's like, right, this is yours, because obviously Jai Arrow was out the door.
Yeah.
So this jersey's yours and hopefully he sticks with it going forward.
Well, the other interesting thing before we finish up with them is that they, if they can sort of finish around there or push for the finals, Ash Taylor comes off contract next year. So, like you said, if they can attract people like David Fifita, and there's a 7 or 6 sort of running around, depending on, Ash Taylor could prove everybody wrong, next year. But, I honestly think they'll be in the finals next year. I think they have a very,
very
good chance.
They should be making a push for the top 8 next year.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got all the stuff, all the right stuff in the right place. Mel's getting the right pieces. Justin Holbrook
barring injury.
Yeah.
If they keep a good 13/17 players consistently on the field, and it's their best 13/17, 4 guys on the bench, that they'll be very much in the mix for the 8.
Yeah, I think so. Before we finish up, there was a couple of sort of late-breaking news, I guess, during the last sort of couple of weeks. I think the first glaring one was Kyle Flanagan. Just seemed to be, for some reason with the Roosters, seemed to be the fall guy for their capitulation from that drubbing by South. But the Bulldogs have now picked up Flanagan for 3 years for $1 million, which... for a 22-year-old halfback that was supposed to be the top halfback going forward at the Roosters, that's going to turn out to be a great buy.
What did they even pick him up for? You can't blame this kid.
No, 22 years old.
For their shortcomings this year.
No, something happened from that South game, and it was not him. Something happened was that 60-8 drubbing. It was not him. It's terrible that they've done that to a 22-year-old. Absolutely terrible.
Well, that could be absolutely confidence shattering. It's good that somebody had picked him up, rather quickly straight away, because that was always going to happen. Like, you could see the potential in him.
Yeah.
And it was throughout the season that the Roosters had supposedly dropped him in favor of Lachie Lamb.
Yeah.
So, and they've also got Sam Walker there, but all this speculation going around that that he's gone, they've got faith in Sam Walker and Lachie Lamb there, but now they're chasing after this young kid Suaalii, so they obviously don't have that much faith in their other young halves there if they're chasing after Suaalii.
I don't know. I have no idea.
And if Suaalii is as good as what he's supposed to be, and he's going to play fullback, he's going to unseat James Tedesco, is he? Yeah,
that's never going to happen. There's no way. I mean, he hasn't signed a contract, him and Carey, yet, but they want to lock them up for life for the next 5 or 6 years. So I don't get why they're trying to sign this kid. As freakish as he possibly sounds, no one's seen him play. He's only 16, by the way.
What do the Roosters want?
I don't know. They have a great side. Already. There's really not much that they really, really need. The Morris... I know we're digressing away from talking about them, but the Morris guys had their best.
I mean, I hope they go around again.
I think they'd have to. They'd be silly not to. Roosters would be silly not to sign them for another year because they had their best season in ages. If it wasn't in the bubble, I guarantee they would have at least had a sniff in for Origin. If it wasn't bubble, at least a sniff. But they literally said, we don't want to be in a bubble again. That was their words. So, but I don't know
whether they want to or not.
Well, they don't have to say yes to go to play Origin. They don't have to.
That's right. They don't have to. But
I meant they don't want to be in a bubble again for another few months for Origin. That's what they said. Yeah. They didn't say
it's another, 3 weeks?
Yeah, they didn't want to.
They've just done it for the last three and a half months.
But in saying that, if we're... look at New South Wales and Queensland squads. Like, I mean, New South Wales squad's pretty stacked.
We said a couple of weeks ago we were going to do our Origin squads before the Origin teams were picked. I don't know how the hell you went, because you just would have had so many options at each position that you could have made three squads for State of Origin.
They've picked a squad. Are you saying have I picked a 1-17
squad? But they haven't named their side though.
I could name a side right now if you really want to. Like, I could name what I think the side will be personally. I mean, we may as well go 1-17. So firstly, it's James Tedesco. I think that's clearly pretty evident.
That's given.
I think so. I mean, you know, no. I think the wingers will be Nick Kotrich and Josh Adokar.
Yep.
I think this is the most contentious sort of area. I honestly think Jack White will still be will play in the centres. I know he's a grade 5'8", but I don't think Keary will not be there. I think put Gutherson in the other centre.
You got to find a spot for Clint Gutherson. You just have to.
I think he's the other centre. I honestly think he's the other centre. The halves are pretty straightforward. Luke Keary and Nathan Cleary. I think that's pretty straightforward.
That's obvious.
The forwards. Now, there's a huge amount to pick from. I think Junior Paulo's played well enough this year to be the number 8. Personally. And I think, just because of who's in the squad, I think Jake Dvojevic could be the other front rower.
I don't know if they want to do that.
I don't know. I mean, you see, the forwards could go either way, but I had sort of him at 10. At 9's Damien Cook. I mean, again, he's just done well enough right at the end to sort of cement that position. Corden and Frizzell.
Oh, he played great throughout the finals.
Boyd Corden and Frizzell's, you know, that's pretty lock in 11 and 12. And I don't know. You take your pick. Do you put Cameron Murray? Do you put Finucane even? I thought Finucane at the lock. I don't know. I don't know. You know, or do you put Cameron McGuinness there? I don't know. That was another hard one.
Right. Yeah. But the second row/slash lock, you're littered with them.
Well, I had Cameron Murray 13, Finucane 14, Payne Huss 15. Take your pick with sort of, you know, even Campbell Gillard. There's a few ones you could sort of throw in the front row as a front row reserve. And he got picked. I don't know why you wouldn't pick him if you didn't put Pappenhausen into number 17. Why not?
So you don't have a spot on the bench for Appy Coruscant?
Where do you put him?
You just have him as that role, like that backup utility role.
Well, that, I mean, I think he would be, I mean, if Pappenhausen's probably still too young, I'd probably put him over Pappenhausen, Appy Coruscant. I think you'd be silly not to. But, you know, there's a lot of players that I think you could put.
Pappenhausen personally would be there for injury cover for the back line.
Possibly. I'd say so. I just think why pick him? Yeah, it's possibly going to be cover. I think Carousel.
I mean, it's a 27-man squad, so there's always going to be extra guys in there. Not all of them are going to get game time.
Well, that's the thing. And then with Carousel, where do you I mean, can he play 9? Can he play anywhere else? That's the other thing. It was why I was
He'd be able to play 13 or in the second row.
I honestly couldn't. I don't think Jake DeVoyce is fine in front row, which I know is a very mobile front row, but
that's the way the game's going. It's going to be, you know, if the NRL sort of wasn't fast enough in a lot of these games this year, Origin is going to be lightning quick.
What's funny is I couldn't find a position, and although Fittler talked him up, do you put Cody Walker as a utility? He talked him up like he was going to be in the 17. That's how hard it's. I mean, I'm sorry. It is ridiculously hard to pick a New South Wales squad.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. You could pick a New South Wales A side.
I say it's hard, but yours is pretty hard to pick as well. Your Queensland squad, surely.
Oh, I thought the Queensland side. There's a few positions that you could go, you know, either way with a few guys, but I thought it was for me it was pretty straightforward. So okay. Fullback AJ Brimson.
Yeah, I think he's done well enough.
Wingers will be look, Valentine Holmes will be on one wing, and I think Xavier Coates will be the other winger. I thought he was good, you know, in a lot of fairly badly beaten Broncos sides. Center, Dane Gagai. And I guess sort of take your pick for the other center, either Heim or Hunt or Philip Sammy. I think, you could sort of take your pick.
I can't believe that's who you've got to pick from.
That's a glaring, there's one glaring hole right there. But any of those guys could play on the wing as well. So it's good sort of injury cover. The halves pick themselves, Munster and Daly Cherry Evans are the 6 and 7.
Huge keys.
That's right. That was one of the things I was hoping for in the grand final was that Munster didn't get hurt.
that's good point.
Because if he got hurt, Queenslander up that familiar creek.
Yeah. Well, the Fiddler brought it up post interview with Brandon Smith. Said, can you feed Munster a few more beers? Right. And Kafusi just a few more beers than he should.
Get him a few more beers under his belt as well. Starting props, Papali, and I'll put Mo Fodawaker in there.
Yeah.
Essentially going away from what New South Wales are doing. New South Wales are going a little bit more mobile, whereas Queensland are going to have to go big boppers up front.
Oh, you can't. Papali's the best
player
of the game.
Yeah. But, Mo Fodawaker up front, I think, is a fairly likely choice. Queensland have got four legitimate dummy halves that they could go with.
But interestingly enough, it's interesting because they could have four legitimate dummy halves, but most of them aren't regular out-and-out number nine, correct?
No, well, I'll put Ben Hunt in.
Yeah, I think you have
to. It sucks for Jake Friend, but I just think Ben Hunt offers a little bit more than what Jake Friend does.
Yeah.
I
think Harry Grant's in there for just experience.
I've got him on the bench, but I'll get to him in a minute. So Ben Hunt at... I'll give Ben Hunt the number nine job. Second row is Lionel Collins, who I thought had a super year for the Roosters. Lindsay Collins. And obviously Felice Kafusi. Jai Arrow at lock was, an easy sort of pick. So the bench, I've put Harry Grant for that utility role. Cohen Hess. As much as I didn't really want to pick Cohen Hess, and I think it'll either be him or I think Fasua Mala'ali will get in over him. I think I'm just looking at the emblem on the jersey and the Cowboys, even though he has been a grave disappointment since his first year in first grade. Patrick Carrigan on the bench as well. Thought he was really good for the Broncos. He's a big, tall sort of rangy dude. And Jaden Sewer. I've put in there as well. I think somebody like Christian Welch.
Christian Welch. Like he could possibly be your starting front row with Papali.
It depends on the way Queensland wants to go. Christian Welch could maybe for me unseat somebody like a Jaden Sewer. And like I said, your impact sort of player, it'll either be Cohen Hess off the bench or Fasua Mala'ali. So they're the sort of the guys that'll have to be those impact players off the bench. And I think Patrick Carrigan will just be, your super solid, might get 25 minutes just to sort of give your props a bit of a break.
I mean, there's probably a little bias. I just thought Christian Welch would possibly definitely be in that 17. I don't think, honestly, Cohen Hess did enough to warrant to be. I think
he should absolutely not be there. But I think in that sort of system and in that representative football, if used right, he could be really damaging.
It's fair. I think Carrigan, that's an astute one. I think that's, he's a fly under the radar guy. It's probably because of the way Bronco has been playing, but he's definitely a fly under the radar guy. That can be right there.
I don't think you did a whole lot wrong.
No, that's right. And obviously they had a lot of injuries as well. The team would be completely different with the injuries that you guys have had in Katoni Staggs. You've had a heap of injuries.
Well, that's it. The Broncos, they were decimated by injuries.
You're Queensland.
Queensland's is, that's, I mean, there's just, unfortunately, we're just in a bit of a holding pattern sort of time depth-wise.
Yeah.
Especially in those strike positions, obviously Dane Gagai is not as young and as and futile as well, as good as what he once was. And then you've got your young guys. I think Philip Sammy, Heimel Hunt, and Xavier Coates are sort of the future there. I think Valentine Holmes almost sort of picked himself, with Kyle Feld sort of going out, bowing out. He's having two lots of surgery this off season. If he was available, I would have picked him over Xavier Coates.
He would have got picked.
I couldn't really find a spot in the back line for Edric Lee as well. But he's in the squad. Branko Lee as well. Solid future. Depth, no out and out superstars.
I think finishing up, I think that that's gonna be their weakest position in the centers. Like you just said with Gagai, if they're gonna have Whiten and Gutherson there in our centers, I think that's gonna be hard to play against, especially the way Whiten played in that back end. And Gutherson, but both of them. I think Gutherson, it's hard. I think he on the season he had, it's hard for him not to be there. I don't think he should be in the running squad. I think he'd be okay at the centres.
He'll be okay to get just to pull on a blue jersey.
I think he deserves to.
They've done it before with New South Wales with fullbacks, the big glaring one is Tom Trbojevic. They played him on the wing. They played him in the centres before. So I think Trbojevic was in the centres last year.
I'm actually surprised that, with the knee issues that Tedesco's having, that Roosters haven't sort of gone in here just a little bit and said, there's a lot of good fullbacks this year. Maybe you just have this one out. I don't think New South Wales are going to be completely disadvantaged if you don't play. So,
possibly. But,
he's still day-to-day.
You put it on the player as well, and if it doesn't look like that he's ready to go, then they've got plenty of cover.
Oh, they've got a phenomenal amount of cover. See, you got Tino too, so your future's, same as ours. Your future's not glaringly as bad as everybody made it out to be. He didn't have the greatest game, but Luai was named in that squad. Zach Lomax, I didn't talk about. He's another guy that's going to be a future for us. Another guy, should be probably the starting front rower is I can't believe they did not pick David Clemmer. I just cannot.
Well, and that's who I thought. Like, surely you've got to put even if you don't put Regan Campbell Gillard or someone like that in there, David Clemmer's got to be in that side.
For him not to be there
is awesome for Queensland.
He had, and I'm not saying his partner didn't have a terrible season because he's in the squad, but he had a better season than David Saifidi.
Oh, so Saifidi was, that's what I mean. So you could start both of those guys in the New South Wales squad if you wanted to.
That's exactly right. So I cannot work for the life of me why that happened. So
it's ridiculous. Clemmer had the most post contact meters this season.
Yeah.
That's a stat that the NRL sort of love to come in, absolutely stealing it from the NFL. But they love that. But that's David Clemmer had the most post contact meters this year.
Yeah. It just befuddles me, and it befuddled him. Befuddled a lot of people. I think I can't remember Fittler coming out and said why, but I don't think the excuse was good enough. So
no, it's not good enough. It's just not good enough. But he's got to beat it. Saifidi's in that side, right? Like
Saifidi's
in that 27.
Yeah, Saifidi's there. That's what I'm saying. He's there.
Clemmer's got to be there.
And Clemmer had a better season. Clemmer had a better season than him. So, but the first game's going to be next Wednesday. So 8 days away for the first game at Adelaide Oval will be the first game. So I guess we'll just sort of see. Well, we haven't talked about we don't have to talk about it much, but even the influence that Wayne Bennett might have on that series. I know he doesn't like interviews, but I think he likes
Big Mel. Big Mel's on the assistant squad as well.
So,
You know, it's hard to discredit any Queensland squad. It's just hard. You just can't do it. It's got to be close. I know people think
they always love the underdog. Queensland always loves the underdog tag.
That's right. And I think it'll be closer that if your 6 and 7 can fire, then and AJ Brimson could have AJ Brimson game. You have a huge chance of winning. I know. I mean, regardless of how good our squad is, your 6 and 7 is probably could be the incumbent in 6 and 7 for Australia, which will probably never happen again for a long time. But
who the hell knows when we're gonna have another kangaroo tour again?
You could easily put them in 6 and 7. There's no reason why you couldn't put them 6 and 7.
No, so, absolutely.
But it'll be a good series. I don't like. And this is just a personal thing. I don't like it at the end of the season. I know we've already talked about that. I think it needs to be in the middle of the season.
That can't continue to happen.
No. It makes sense purely for the fact of the whole COVID rules and they couldn't have all the other players in the bubble for backup and that. But it can't happen. It just can't. Because it's gonna be the death knell, as you've said already, wanting to play for Australia. It just will be.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's been forced upon them this year, and that's all well and good. Yeah, that's terrific, but it just can't happen going forward. It just can't happen. No, they want to go on. What about injuries and everything like that? It's football. It's a contact sport. You're gonna have injuries.
Yeah, that's right.
People are gonna want to put their body on the line for 3 state of origins, and you know what I mean. If they're not quite 100%, and that's just not the arena you want to go into where you're 85% or 90%.
Yeah.
You have to be at tip-top shape, and there's going to be guys that are going into this Origin series that haven't played football in a month, more than a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get away with that when you name your kangaroo squad because you're picking from everybody. You're not just picking New South Wales or Queensland. You're picking from everybody. So you can get guys that have still been playing and that are in form.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's going to be guys that are out there that's right, they haven't played for a month.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And it'll be interesting. I mean, there's talk that why there's sort of COVID restrictions on for that Queensland game that they should have a near capacity because they can. Woo. So that'll be very interesting to see that.
Lovely.
Well, that'll do it.
They had 40-odd thousand. They had 40-odd thousand for the preliminary final for the Storm.
Yeah, that's
last
right.
Last week.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's Suncorp Stadium at near capacity, 52,500.
Yeah,
they had 40-odd thousand. Obviously, they had the blunder with 20,000 people waiting outside. But
But
you know what I mean? Like, if they can get 40-odd thousand in there, that'll be a pretty raucous crowd.
Yeah, well, hopefully the series...
And another 40,000 on Caxton Street.
Hopefully the series is tied up there and then just nullifies the crowd, but we'll see. I'm very certain it will be, but we'll see. We shouldn't be biased on here, but we clearly are.
100%.
That'll do it for this week. So that'll be... We'll still continue to do NRL podcasts. We've got to review the other sort of top 8 sides and talk about... bits and pieces here and there, but essentially
we'll break down what we've done at the grand final. We'll break down each Origin game and then we'll give a little bit of our season review as well. So we've still got a couple more to go before we nick off for good for the NRL, but there's still NFL happening this season. Yeah. Who the hell knows when the NBA season is going to start up again. So we'll still give out, obviously they'll be a little bit shorter than what this one is, but, there's still always plenty to talk about.
Definitely. And obviously you can get them on Facebook, which has all the links for our podcast, which is just Final Play Podcast, and Twitter at Final Play Pod. Also, Gimco is the other place you can get it. Gimco.com.au is where you can see all our podcasts as well. Every single podcast, I notice. Not just the first, not just the 102nd one that we just did then. Like, every single one's there from the first one. On, so. Man. Which is great.
Same as Spotify as well. Check us out on Spotify. If you search the Final Play Podcast, scroll a long way down if you want to find us. You just go on the Facebook page and check us out on and just open up the link Yeah. Open up the link that we put up there, the Spotify link that's on there, and then all you have to do is just follow us off that, and it's pretty easy.
That's the best way to do it. Just hit the link off there, and once you like and follow, that's it, that you'll get it every week. You'll get the podcast. Trust me, I see it on mine every single week. I don't like hearing myself. So have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. Hate the sound of my voice, Smith. Hate it.
Oh, you love it. What are you talking about?
Nah, I don't like it. That's okay.
Then what are you on here for, then?
Because I love talking about sports. That's the only reason I'm here.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, no, that's right. That's I'm Miles. Can't wait for State of Origin. Plum.
I mean, I know we've essentially bagged to having it at the end of the season, but I can't wait for Origin.
Oh, I can't wait. I always love the end of the year, even if it's the Kangaroo tour. I love watching representative football.
It's one of the it's always great, you know, especially living in Queensland, following New South Wales. And as you could be playing terribly, but it's still a fun time because next to all the time that I wear the shirt, I get bagged consistently. Oh yeah.
You get smashed for wearing that rubbish.
It's not even that it's blue. It's like a dark navy. And they just see that little bit of New South Wales emblem and they just get smashed. Yeah,
as soon as it's got that filthy New South Wales emblem on it, it is garbage.
I get it. Literally, I'll get in the car. And I remember last year, I got in the car and went, oi, what? Take that off. And then that was it. So, classic North Queensland. You'll love it.
I gotta love it.
All right. Have a good week, everyone. See ya.
See ya. Queenslander.
Oh, boo. I'm putting that in there. Boo.